I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com. Piet Viljoen, portfolio manager at Counterpoint and star attraction at the BizNews conference, which jeepers, Piet, it's just around the corner now.
No, it's not that far away. And when it comes, it'll be spinning as well, which is nice.
August the 30th until September the 2nd. And you're going to be engaged in a debate, which should be real interesting. But I wanted to ask you a little about your bundles.
Yes, my bundle of twigs, my bundle of twigs.
Are you going to have some more bundles to, or another bundle to share with us?
Yeah, I'll have some more twigs to share, not a whole bundle. The whole bundle is a portfolio, as it stands, but I definitely have some more twigs to share with you.
Now, I've got to ask you about one in particular. Today I had the BizNews model portfolio update and decided to sell Avenge to go for another one of your favorite stocks, Transaction Capital, and Absa, which was recommended by Cookie Koyman. But the reason I decided to do that was because of feedback I was getting on Moorman's, which wasn't very good, which was one of the reasons why Avenge was an appealing stock for some people. What's your view? It used to be one of your twigs. I know you've done very well out of it. Is it still there?
It's still there. I haven't sold it yet. I haven't been buying any of it either. But I still think it's undervalued. And in a portfolio context, I think it still makes a lot of sense. So I still own it. And we'll see what happens going forward.
What happens with those twigs of yours? When do you decide to take them out of your portfolio?
It's one of two things. Either they get fully valued and you sell them, or the second thing, you get an opportunity to buy something better or cheaper. And then it's a relative argument you have to make. So it's generally one of those two things that causes me to sell one of my twigs. Doesn't happen very often, though. Transactional activity in the portfolio is quite low.
So do you actually, just help us here on how the experts or the professionals do it. Do you do your analysis and put a valuation on a particular stock, and then as long as it stays below that valuation, stay with it?
Yeah. Look, I try and steer clear of a specific point in time single valuation number. So I think the value of any business is very much a gray area and depends on prospects. It depends on the environment, depends on management actions at any particular point in time. So there's a whole bunch of variables that go into it, and these change on a regular basis. So, as long as the stock is within that broad gray area of being undervalued, in other words, there is upside going forward, then I will continue to hold it. As long as that upside pays you for the risk you're taking on owning a stock. Because when you own the stock of any business, you're taking on business risk, that company's specific business risk. Whether it's LastPass or whether it's Avenge, you are taking on you take on some sort of risk. I mean, that's why you invest. You investing is taking on risks that you think you're being paid to take on. And that's effectively the definition of investing. So as long as it's in that gray area where, in my estimation, I'm being paid for owning the risk of that business, I'll continue to hold on it.
You mentioned LastPass, a big announcement yesterday, and long overdue, some money managers would recommend. What's your thoughts on it?
Look, I mean, there's positives and negatives. I think they are doing the right thing in principle by trying to narrow the discount in this fashion. They need to narrow the discount. They need to take action to narrow the discount. Everything they've done up to now has just served to widen the discount, to complicate matters, and has been highly ineffective. And one can understand why they would do that, because they were incentivized to do other things. They weren't incentivized to narrow the discount. However, I think a better way of narrowing the discount would be to unbundle the 10 cent share to their shareholders and get on with a pure play venture capital investing firm, which is what they are doing. They're just using the cash flow of the 10 cent to subsidize that activity. I think shareholders would rather want to choose whether they want to own a high quality business like 10 cent, which generates lots of cash, albeit out of China with its own set of circumstances, set of risks, and or a portfolio of venture capital loss-making businesses, which might turn into something substantial in the future, but at the moment they are loss-making. You know, I think investors probably don't want the mix of those two things. They probably would, some would prefer Tencent, others would prefer the venture capital portfolio. So the right thing to do to unlock or to narrow the discount would be to unbundle the Tencent shares, and then you will get a fair value for the venture capital portion of the business.
Interestingly, looking at it from the other perspective and the argument that we heard from Bob van Dijk yesterday, it's almost like they've now got this treasure chest of $140 billion that had been frozen in the past. They weren't allowed to sell the Tencent shares. Now they can sell them, and they can sell them at any rate that they want to. They say responsibly, but I guess if they got a good opportunity or if somebody knocked on the door and said, we want to buy $20 billion worth of stock, they'd be able to do that. And by using that money to acquire assets in a market where the assets are suddenly so much cheaper would seem to be a good call. But I guess you'd have views on that as well.
Yeah, my view is that I'm not a venture capital investor. I don't know how those things work. I'm a late stage equity investor, and those are the sort of assets I'm comfortable with. I think if that's what management wants to do, buy venture capital loss making businesses, which they hope to grow into profitable dominant businesses, then they must do it. Then they must unbundle the Tencent and carry on with their venture capital investing. To sell a great cash generating business to redeploy that capital into loss-making early-stage businesses, I'm not sure that's what investors want. That's maybe what Bob wants, but I'm not sure that's what investors want.
So the big increase in the share price yesterday, on average 20% for both Naspers and Prosus, that wouldn't be drawing you into buying those shares now?
No, I think the 20% increase is fully justified by the actions they're taking to narrow the discount. The discount was very, very wide, and it was saying that these guys aren't going to be able to narrow the discount. They obviously now have shown the market that they at least partially want to close the discount. The market has rewarded them for that. But I think that's about it. You're still sitting with a business which is selling its crown jewel to invest into what might or might not be future crown jewels. Where, you know, the jury's still out on those.
So it's not something that you'd be jumping into right now.
It's not something that excites me now.
At the last BizNews conference, Stafford Marcy gave, I thought, a very compelling argument for Bitcoin. We've spoken about this in the past, and I remember you saying that as an insurance, you should have a few percent, a couple of percent really. I think it was 2 or 3% you were talking about in your portfolio. Given what's happened with cryptocurrencies recently, would you still be of that opinion?
Yeah, I'm still of that opinion. One doesn't know the future, and as long as you aren't over-allocated to Bitcoin or any of its derivatives or stablemates on the blockchain, I think that's fine. I think 2 to 3% is a lot. I would say, whatever you're comfortable with in terms of the possibility of losing everything. I mean, it could go to zero. So if you're comfortable losing 10% of your assets, you can comfortably own 10% of your assets in Bitcoin. Whatever you're comfortable losing, or whatever is not going to cause you sleepless nights, you know, that's the number you should be investing in, with the knowledge that it could go to zero, or it could go to a big number, or it could do nothing. You know, you just don't know. But it seems to me that the technology behind Bitcoin and Ethereum and all these things, there are a lot of smart people spending a lot of money trying to come up with use cases that could benefit consumers globally. And if that happens, then there's tremendous upside.
Bit your challenge with Magnus Haystick. It's almost 2 months ago that we last spoke about it. And at that point in time, your $500,000 was really outperforming his $500,000 that one of our business community members had allocated to you. In the past 6 weeks, has it been more of the same?
To be honest, Alec, I'm not sure. I would guess that we're probably where we were, relatively speaking, a few months ago. I think both markets have come down. I think our market might have come down less than the US market. But I'm not sure. It's not something I track. I know over the next 5 years, there's going to be lots of swings and roundabouts in this competition. There's going to be periods when SA stocks do really, really well, and there's going to be periods when US stocks do really, really well. So it's not something I'm tracking on a daily basis. I think that's pretty futile. I think over the 5 years, the odds are on my side, and I've got a decent chance of winning.
Why are the odds on your side?
I mean, valuation is all about odds, isn't it? I mean, it's valuations are what determines your chance of success. If you can buy a reasonable asset at a very cheap valuation, you've got the odds on your side. I always tell the stories about the person walking into a casino to say a roulette table, and the house offers you 100-1 on black coming up. Now, black's a 50-50 chance, even odds chance coming up, ignoring the zeros. But if they offer you 100-1, it's a bet you have to take. And if you take that bet, continue taking that bet, you will make a lot of money. And that is a cheap asset. It's where the cheap asset is where the odds are on your side. It doesn't mean you can win. You can still lose. You can still lose 10 times in a row. The red can come up 10 times in a row. It's quite possible. But the odds on your side. And that's what cheap valuations bring to the table. It brings the odds on the side.
So the probabilities are what you calculate all
exactly.
the time.
It's what risk am I taking? What am I being paid to take that risk? And that's the valuation of an asset.
And right now in the South African market, before I ask you about ABSA and transaction capital, I've got to get your thoughts on that. Right now, when you look generally at the South African market.
If I look at the South African market, if you look at the fundamentals of the market, today our long-term interest rates are, I don't know, 10.5%, 11%. Inflation is at 7%. We have real 4% yield. Assets are all priced off the interest rate curve. So your risk-free assets, government assets, interest rates on government assets, bonds, determine how assets in the market are priced. So our assets are all priced off an 11% risk-free long bond yield, which is a 4% real interest rate, whereas U.S. assets are priced off a 3% long bond yield with inflation at 8%, negative 5% yield. And that, again, shows you how much cheaper our assets are than U.S. assets. You have lower inflation and higher interest rates, higher discount rates. And that just, you know, so what's happened, for instance, in bond markets this year, our bond yields have fallen from, I think, 9.5% or 10% to 11%, so down 1.5%. And U.S. bond yields are also down from, say, 1.5% to 3%. You know, yields are up, prices are down, also 1.5%. Except investors in U.S. bonds have lost money because they don't have the protection of a high interest rate. I mean, the interest rate was 1% when they started. So if they lose capital when interest rates move up, you make capital losses. There's no buffer from high interest rates against that. Whereas in our bond market, our yields have also moved up substantially. But because we have a running yield of 10% odd, you know, we've lost almost 10% on capital, but we've earned 10% on interest. So we square effectively. And again, that just illustrates how cheap valuations help you generate a return. So that's the fundamental behind the South African market. We have lower interest rates, lower inflation rates, and higher interest rates than most developed markets in the world. So we have valuations on our side. If you look at the PE ratio of SA stocks, excluding the national, excluding the Richemonts and the Naspers and the, you know, all the international type stocks, local stocks, the PE ratio is eight times. That's an earnings yield of say 12%. With, you know, inflation of say 7% and real growth of 1 or 2%, you know, so that's nominal growth of almost 10% with an earnings yield of 12%. That's over 20% return, expected return from SA stocks. Now, a lot has to go wrong, and I'm sure a lot will go wrong in this country, but a lot has to go wrong to eat into the 22% starting return. So you've got valuations on your side. So I'm still optimistic about the returns. Not the economy. I'm not optimistic about the economy. I'm not optimistic about what's happening in politics. I'm not optimistic on a lot of stuff in this country, on the electricity being on in 2 hours. I'm not optimistic about those things. But I'm optimistic about the returns that assets can generate from where they are priced today, because they are discounting all these negatives that you and I and all the listeners and viewers know about. I mean, these are not new negatives. These are existing negatives. And marks are smart. They price these in very quickly. So these negatives are in the price. And it has to go a lot worse to make a dent in your expected return of over 20%. Whereas in the US, everything has to go right just to generate a 3 or 4% return. And that's what makes it difficult.
Fantastically well put there, Pitt. You spoke about interest rates. You spoke about stocks being offering value. That was where APSA came onto Corky's radar, no doubt. APSA, and we've now put it into the BizNews portfolio. Same price virtually as where it was 10 years ago. And in a higher interest rate environment, surely that would be offering some value. New management.
Well, APSA is, I think, the second or third biggest stock in the Counterpoint Value Fund. So I agree. I agree with, for once, I agree with Corky. We don't always agree, but for once, I agree with him. I think it's a tremendously undervalued stock. The interesting thing is that it seems there are some early signs of the credit cycle starting to turn up. Private sector credit is growing at around 7, 8, 9%, which hasn't happened for a long time in this country. You know, we'll see if that's a green shoot or it's a head fake. But it's interesting. If credit growth picks up, these banks are going to fly. There's no doubt about that. But we'll have to look at that. We'll have to watch that number closely over the coming months to see what's happening. So that's one thing. And in the meantime, I think APSA is in a dividend yield of 6 or 7%. That's almost in line with what you can get in the money market from a bank that will probably grow its earnings over the next 5 years. So I think it's very good value.
So happy to hear that. And then closing off with Transaction Capital. It was a company that, again, at the BizNews conference, you highlighted the appeal of it. How are you seeing it right now, given that the share price has come back sharply?
So that is one of the stocks, one of the twigs that we sold out of in the Counterpoint Value Fund about, I don't know, 6 months ago, 9 months ago, I can't remember. But now 38 grand, I see it's trading there today. It's probably worth another look because it's a great business with great management. I think the share price just got a bit ahead of itself. One always has to be careful with these type of stocks where you have good management running a good business. They always seem to be too expensive all the time. And if you're not careful, you miss out on quite a good ride. So that is one I think that bears watching.
Pitt Viljoen, the portfolio manager of the Counterpoint Value Fund, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.